Have you ever applied a skincare product to your body and wondered what kind of crazy chemicals are in it, and then read the ingredient list and realized you can't even pronounce half the ingredients? Your skin is the largest organ of your body, and what you put on it becomes part of you. In fact, if your skincare has chemicals you wouldn't eat, you probably ought not rub it all over your body. This is why in our house we use Tallow Skin Solutions Body Butter. It is made with all natural ingredients that are safe enough to eat and offer your skin the nutrients it can thrive on. The tallow is sourced from a family farm in Georgia, which practices sustainable regenerative agriculture. The body butter also has organic coconut oil, organic cocoa butter, and organic essential oils. The texture is silky and luxurious as it is whipped to the perfect consistency. Enjoy one of the five different scents. My personal favorite is creamsicle, which blends vanilla and orange and smells delicious. If you've never used a natural product like this, you are in for a treat. Go to tallowskinsolutions.com and enter code MINDFUL for 20% off. That's tallowskinsolutions.com and use code MINDFUL for 20% off your next order.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hi, I'm Les Raymond with the Mindful Movement. Thanks for joining me today for another episode of the podcast. Today's guest is the author of The Align Method. He is the host of the Align podcast, which I think is ranked one of the top podcasts in health and nutrition on the Apple Podcasts platform. It's a tremendous resource. I highly recommend you checking out his book, The Align Method, is an outstanding resource. It's a tremendous value. Tons of great useful information, practical application tips. I highly recommend it. There's a lot of topics in that book that we didn't get a chance to touch on in this conversation, so I do encourage you to check it out. We'll put a link in the description below to the book. I hope you enjoy today's conversation. I'm still new at this. I was a little nervous. Aaron was actually, being more experienced in the podcast world, was nice enough to walk me through some tips in the middle of the conversation to help settle my nerves, which I'm grateful for. And I really appreciate you tuning in today. I hope you enjoy, and I thank you for your listening.
Okay, welcome to the Mindful Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Les Raymond. Thanks for joining us today. I'm grateful for your listening. I have a special guest today. He is many things. One is the author of The Align Method, an outstanding book that I encourage you to check out that you're going to hear a lot about today. He is the host of the Align podcast. He's a manual therapist, a movement coach, and in my opinion, he's really a bright light out there in the world, inspiring others to explore their own well-being and ways to improve that. Please say hello to the audience, Aaron Alexander.
Hey, man. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate making the time.
Yeah. I really appreciate you coming out here. I mean, this is really new to me, the podcasting thing. And I still have like a lot of fear and insecurities around it, my ability to do it well. And it was just like, it really made my day just to see that, man, this guy that I've been listening to for a while is going to come out and have a conversation with me. I say, come out. Are you in California now?
I'm in Santa Monica. Yeah.
Santa Monica. Okay. So come out over Zoom and have a conversation. It was, it really made my day, and I'm really grateful for you to take the time. It's kind of humbling, and I really appreciate it. And I just want you to know that.
Appreciate that.
Okay, so recently I'm big into self-development, and right now with the current lockdown, I've really tried to, I guess, look for opportunities to see what can I improve on, and just kind of observe my daily practices and where is the low-hanging fruit, where are the opportunities, and I'm always looking for a good book. And I don't remember exactly how your book came in front of me. I know I've heard you on other podcasts many times, and recently I just went ahead and got your book on Audible and listened to it. And I listened to it while I was like walking through the woods in my backyard, and it was just
really great because I feel like you did such a great job kind of putting together so many aspects of well-being and as far as, and from an application standpoint, because, you know, sometimes it's really hard to find entry points for us to work in some new modality into our lifestyle. And I felt like you made it really inviting and easy to say, oh, I could do this. Let me try this with a very accessible entry point. So I want to thank you for the way that you put it together. So it was very easy to listen to and really easy to implement to some level. And I'd like to maybe start out with letting the audience know, well, actually, what am I talking about? Before we get into that, let's learn a little bit about you and like kind of where you, how you got to where you are now before we get into the details of the book, I guess.
I was thinking about that literally this morning because it's like a common interview question, I guess, is like, you know, how did you get to be you, whatever that means for each individual person. And I think each person for the most part feels like they're in the same place they were when they were a little kid getting bullied or getting, you know, whatever. I wasn't really bullied all that much per se, but just felt very awkward and very like, you know, every day I would be happy or cool enough or good enough or whatever when. And I think so many people that are in the kind of highest echelons of society, oftentimes they've just been filling these deficits for so long and they've never really gotten down to like the bottom of ever really just being content with who they are, whatever that means. Yeah. You know, and so I think it's an interesting thing from the outside looking in. It's very easy for everybody to think that everybody's life is like more interesting than theirs. And from the inside, for the most part, people are dealing with all the same internal kind of static that they've been dealing with since they were little kids in large part. You know, a lot of our development comes from like the third trimester, probably before that, to like age 4 to 6 territory, you know, and then from there, it's like, okay, here's your software programs, you know, enjoy.
The damage was already done.
Yeah. Damage or blessing or whatever, right. You know, and so I think that how, wherever the heck I am, you know, arrived to this point, I kind of feel like I'm just playing the algorithm, man. You know, I got handed this deck of cards, this hand, and, you know, from there, and then I had a mom and I had a dad and I had an environmental situation. And I had a cultural indoctrination and I had school and I had thoughts and beliefs and all that. And you kind of play each one the way that you see appropriate in that instance. And then you pop out into being this moment and someone says, how did you get to here? It's like, I don't know. I think I've just kind of rolled through it. You know, here we are. Yeah, so that's not a very good response, but that's the way I feel.
It's well said. I mean, there's a cumulative momentum of everything that's ever happened to us that brings us here. And yeah, we have this illusion that those things that brought us here happened at some other time or like before, but it's just a series of present moments and we're just in this one right now.
Yeah. And the thing that I think is very valuable is so much of my life, including like even my morning, was spent in part thinking about those similar thoughts, you know, the wanting and then the aversions and then the wanting and then the aversions, and thinking this morning of like, oh man, like I need to connect with this person, or I need to like sell this many things, or I need to do that. And like having this underlying sensation of kind of like a deficit, you know, or like this void that like, okay, once I arrive there, then I'll feel filled up.
You'll be good enough. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, just behind that, that's like the superficial crust layer of your personality that you've come to be accustomed to. And then just below that is all the other good stuff, I think. You know, so there's like that static crust layer of noise, which isn't a bad thing. It's a great thing to navigate the world. Like Ram Dass said, you have to remember your social security number and your Buddha nature. You know, so it's like being able to operate within that crust level of all of the noise and the wanting and the projections and the goals, and, you know, have your eye on the prize and keep on focusing on that. And then there's, if you allow yourself the spaciousness and the quietness, which it seems like that's a big part of what you explore with your channels and such. If you allow yourself that spaciousness and that quietness to kind of sink a little bit below that, then all of a sudden there's like this deeper layer of contentment that was always there, just for the most part, we're not really taught how to be with that part. And so I go in and out of that. I oscillate in and out of that daily.
It's easy to forget it, even if you are taught at one point.
Yeah, well, being taught something and actually putting in reps to make it be a part of who you are is, you know, they're like very different. Everybody knows everything. You can't tell anybody anything. It's just a matter of, are you able to, and this comes into like the, with the book stuff, are you able to deliver a message in such a way that the person feels like it's accessible and feels like it's attainable and feels like it's their idea as well, I think is really important. You know, so if you make something overly complex and convoluted and it's kind of like you're just spinning in your own intellect, you know, and kind of trying something that I've done a lot, and I might be guilty of it right now in some of these sentences actually I'm hearing, kind of trying to make it sound as though you're like smarter than you are or stronger than you are or whatever it may be. And in fact, underneath all of that, you actually are much smarter and stronger and all those things than you think you are. You know, but it's that superficial crust layer that typically there's a lot of compensation that comes out of that. And so in the writing of the book, for example, that was a big part, is like really making things bite-sized and making things accessible and making things personable and making sure that the author or that, you know, the teacher isn't coming from this like infallible pedestal, but is actually like, I'm just a dude trying to figure this shit out. And here's my journey. And I'd love to share, and you're welcome to come along. You know, I think that's a fairly decent place to come from like a teaching perspective.
That's well said. I know I'm guilty of the I don't want to say flaws, but those tendencies in the gym environment, as someone that the nature of the relationship in the gym where you're coaching someone is you're directing traffic. I mean, you're asking them to do something. So there's this built-in kind of teacher-student relationship that's innate to the relationship, really, to why they're there. And it could be really challenging to not come off like an asshole when you're telling someone what to do. I mean, it's its own skill set. And if you make it complex and like you're teaching an exercise and there's, you know, seven different cues you're looking for, or seven different like components of this movement, for instance. And if you vomit all that, those cues to somebody at once, it's like, it doesn't work. It doesn't come off very well. But if you like pick one little thing, and I see those other ones, and we'll get to that, you know, next round, next session, next week, next month, next year, whatever, you could like inch your way and just make these steps forward and just always be stepping forward and observing how that go and where we go from here.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of the book? I always mess how it's called, but I think it's called King, Warrior, Magician, Lover. Have you heard of that one?
I haven't, no.
Oh, it's good. Highly recommended. I like went through it multiple times because it was so good and doing a lot of highlighting and all that stuff. And it talks about a lot of Jungian archetype stuff, and a lot of people are still operating in like a more like a child archetype. You know, so each one of those, like, just like the king archetype and the warrior and the magician, the lover, those are like the more fully fleshed out kind of grown up archetypes. And then there's shadow sides of each of those. And then there's also kind of like the nascent child version of each of those as well. Mm-hmm. And I think oftentimes when people are coming from a place of, they're in a place of power, and then they end up actually taking advantage of that power and using it to inflate their own ego, that's typically coming from a place more of like a childish version of that king, you know? And so one of the things, I'm messing up what it said in there, but it's just, I think it's something along the lines of like, the king is as selfless as the, I think they might've called it the armchair tyrant, I think was the, like the young shadow side of the king. But anyways, it's the king is as selfless as that child side is selfish. And so when you can come into that place of truly like, I don't need the glory of this. I'm just here to be of support, you know, and I don't need the congratulations. I don't need the pats on the back. I don't need the, cause I'm just here as a vessel to support and help. You know, when you really come to that point of somebody that's like a real master of something, they're not looking for your like, wow, like you killed it. You did great. Like, wow, this is you. It's like the master will always just reflect that back. Like, no, it's you. And it's not just a, oh, it's you because I read that in a book or I heard that was like a spiritual thing to say. It's like, no, it's you.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, that's well said. Yeah. Speaking of books, in your book, you mentioned my favorite book, and it, like, I never hear anybody mention this book or one of my favorite books. I guess one of the few books that I've read like more than four times, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
Oh, cool.
And it's, I mean, that book, like the program that I've developed over the years is kind of born out of that book. For kind of a different reason that you mentioned it, but just when the fact that you mentioned it was like, I don't know, it just sparked something into me. I just thought it was cool because, like, nobody I talk to will get through that book. Like, I've dished that book. Like you just recommended a book to me. It's on my radar. I guarantee it'll be read sometime in the next month or two.
I mean, yeah, check it out.
That's how I do it. And then, you know, I've dished this book out so many times. It's helped me so many ways, and I can't get somebody to seem to get through the whole thing. You know, that's one of those things. It's just hard to help somebody that doesn't want to be helped. That's not willing to, you know, change the way they spend their time just yet. But
don't need to force anything on people. Yeah. And if you just create that enjoyable little breadcrumb trail, then eventually that creates enough momentum with a person, you know? And so, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that book references this relationship to the motorcycle as like the technology and how there is two approaches, like classical and romantic, to interact with the technology and with the idea of being able to ask yourself, like, does this now get you down the road better? Like, did you add more utility? Did what you did to the motorcycle add more utility? Did it serve? And I relate that to like my movement practice of we are the technology, our body. And there's an idea, there's like a, not a goal that we want to be attached to, but there's a direction that we want it to move towards based on like our values and taking into context like what we're designed to do from an evolutionary standpoint. And it's very, not, I would say easy, and there's no true objectivity because it's kind of born out of subjectivity in some way, but we could ask ourselves, like, did this exercise or did this activity or this behavior add utility? Like, is your body better at providing utility for the you that's inside, like the you that's in there that you're a vessel, that your body's a vessel for? Yep. And I've always used that as like a guiding light of, you know, does this fit in the program? And is this person expressing this quality through this pattern on this day in a way where we're adding utility to him or her?
Yep. Yeah.
And just love that book. So many lessons in that. Let's get into your book, the Align Method. What inspired you to put this book together?
I think working with clients. So I'd worked with clients before writing the book for about 15 years, 14 years before like the book started to come into the making. We started like putting a proposal together for it. And through that time, there was a lot of seeing immediate effect and impact, like positive impact with clients, and then seeing regression, you know, with time away. And so that became really interesting to me. And it's a part that I don't think we really examine enough. You know, we have like our tricks that we'll do in whatever the clinical setting is or classroom setting or where it may be, but I'm way more interested in what a person does for the other 23 hours a day, other than like the hour that you see whoever your practitioner is for once or twice a week. You know, so creating a really easily digestible manual on how to be more effective in the way that you drive your body, occupy yourself, outside of actually when you're intentionally in the gym or in the yoga studio or Pilates or dance or seeing your physical therapist. That was the big thing that I feel like is a gaping deficit in Western culture, because the mold that we inhabit is one that if you just allowed yourself to be like dust in the wind in Western culture, you would just be bombarded by advertisements all the time, and you'd be hunched over into a position with your forward head posture, and your shoulders would be rolled forward, and you're got that hyperkyphotic spine, your knees are collapsing in, and your feet a little, you're like, that's the mold that we've created is kind of a little bit like that. You've seen Idiocracy, the movie? You gotta have seen that one. You never saw Idiocracy. Oh my God, it's an important one. That's, I mean, it's a comedy. It's very funny. You know, but in that, it's like the people of the future, because we've outsourced the necessity to learn and outsourced this necessity to move, we just become these kind of like withered, atrophied, you know, Smithers from The Simpsons type creatures.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone's, you know, dumb. And like, I think the president is like some football player or something like that. And it's just, you know, it kind of veers in that direction. So I think that Western culture, as much as it has so much beautiful things to offer, like there's a lot of really cool stuff. From a physical perspective, what we've done is we've outsourced the necessity to need to have a robust physical body, you know, and our physiology ends up kind of waning because we just don't need to use it for things. You know, you go into a room, you know, I have my door open and the sun's coming in, and you know, I've got a cold plunge over here, and then I've got an infrared sauna over there, and I'll probably jump in the ocean at some point as soon as like legal to do that. Yeah. You know, so every time that you do those things, your body needs to step up to the demand and say, oh, okay, cool. We need to figure out getting this person's body temperature back to, you know, 98.6. You know, it's like, it's really cold. Okay, we need to show up for this person at a cellular level. Oh, it's really hot. Okay, we need to bring it down a little bit. Oh, they're like walking longer than typical. They're like, they're huffing and puffing. Like, okay, we need to figure this out for this person. You know, whereas what we've done such an amazing job as a people, as a culture, is outsourcing all of that stuff. And now at a cellular level, the body begins to start to atrophy, you know, and it doesn't feel good. Like one of the sweetest feelings that I have in my body is feeling like really strong, you know, and feel like that this moment's like, you know, you did some squatting or some deadlifting or something that kind of added this higher demand than what your body's accustomed to. And then for the next day, a couple of days, a few days after that, there's like, it's like this ease that you move through the world with because now the weight is lessened.
Everything else is easier, yeah.
Yeah, but culturally, we've kind of done the inverse of that. It's like, how do we reduce the weight? You know, this gravity stuff is killing us. You know, I'm like, let's get out of that. But then what you see with, you know, astronauts, and I included a bunch of research from Joan Vernikos in there. She's written several books on the topic. She was a researcher for NASA for like 40 years. And she was helping with the health of astronauts. And what she found was that astronauts, when they were in space, they needed regular drips of fitness throughout the day, as opposed to doing like this blowout CrossFit workout or SoulCycle workout once a day, and then just letting their body kind of go into this zero gravity floating effect for the rest of the day. Frequency mattered, exactly. You know, so the people that did that blowout and then just allowed themselves to float, which is pretty typical to like the modern mold, they would go into this rapid aging effect, and their bones would become less dense, and their muscles would turn to fat, and their cognitive function would decline, and you know, all that. They just like whoosh, like turbo speed into being older people. But the people that would do those titrates of fitness, those little drips of movement throughout the day with regularity, which is what we've done forever, right? You know, and it's what we still are doing. If you're in a culture like, they've been research, I'll shut up in a second. I realize I'm just ranting on, but they did some research with Hadza tribesmen and women recently. There was a researcher from UCLA that went out there and studied the various different people out there and was specifically measuring the amount of movement that they were doing throughout the day, but also what type of movement they were doing. So what they found was that the people weren't actually all that, it wasn't that they moved so much more, but that their resting positions were much more active. So when they were resting, they were in a deep squat, they were kneeling, they were toe sitting, maybe they had one knee up for a second, maybe they were in a 90-90 position, maybe they were laying on their belly for a bit, laying on their side for a bit, laying on their back for a bit, you know, and it's like, oh, interesting. So it's almost like there's this built-in onboard massage therapist, physical therapist in our bodies. And if we allow them to relate to our environment in such a way that heals our joints and circulates our fluid, you know, but if you take away that environmental therapist, you know, and you bring some other Western culture, new age therapist that's smoking a cigarette and eating a bunch of processed nonsense and kind of it's hunching in, like that's kind of like the Western environmental doctor. And then there's the nature doctor, which is like, that's the, like the naturopath. And they're like, you need to squat more and, you know, get more sunlight and drink more water. It's very easy.
I think it's easy. I think it's not that it's easy. It's common. Like people overlook the need for the environment because that drives like motor control. I mean, that sensory input that we get drives behavior. I mean, even when you're learning how to move and you're a baby on the floor, you're reliant on the fact that you're on the floor in space and there's gravity just slamming away on you. Mm-hmm. And at that age, your head is like ginormous relative to your body compared to an adult. So like the act of getting your head off the ground and moving it around, like that's the beginning of strength training. And you're right. Yeah. Like it's good to feel strong. There's an organization out there that is a large, like certifying body in, I guess, strength exercises, you'd call it, called Strong First.
And oh, Pavel, he's right down the street.
Yeah. So my strength journey started with, I guess, the company that was born out of, which was the RKC back in, I think around like 2011 or so. But, you know, Strong First, it's a great name. And I guess their pitch is you could be anything you want, just be strong first. That of all the qualities to practice, like that makes up for the most other qualities. The holding, you know, everything else constant, it makes everything else easier. And what was eye-opening in your book is like, I think of strength, sometimes I think about it from like, kind of outside of the box, whether it be mentally or emotionally, or even like the ability for a single mom to raise three kids and the strength involved with that. But generally I think of it as, you know, the musculoskeletal system. And there's some things that, like, I guess I don't look at. And one was really, well, no pun intended, eye-opening to me. You talk about the eyes a lot, and really you speak about the senses in general and how they relate in the far-reaching components of our life that our relationship with our senses brings. And it was interesting, like, just learning, like, there's this whole system, and just like you say, like, if we don't move around, we atrophy. And I think it's kind of known that the older you get, the faster that rate of atrophy comes in. But, like, there's all these other mechanisms within our body that it's very easy to lose sight of that aren't talked about as much. The eyes being one of them, the feet being one of them, and all the information that we get from them. And, you know, this Western culture we have, or it's not just Western now, like the screen culture that we have, where your eye is fixed at a, you know, one focal point. Whereas if you took a more ancestral approach, it'd be obvious that, yeah, we were out in the wilderness and our eyes were all over the place, looking at things at all different distance and all different directions. And, you know, that comes at a price. This, the fact that we're not stressing that, we're diminishing the environment for our eyes. Can you speak on that and some of the senses a little bit? Like,
yeah, for sure. Well, so one thing that's, I think the idea of strong first, and I know Pavel, he's a buddy, like, literally just like a few blocks down the street. And I really greatly value his perspectives. And I think that the strong first can be misleading. If like your idea is like, okay, just get strong. There's a lot, what does strong mean? You know, first, so there's all the other realms of strong, like you're describing, you know, being a strong person in a relationship, being a strong person in your business, being a strong person just for yourself, internally, emotionally, you know, that's a really big deal. And I think your physical self trickles into that and vice versa, because at a structural physical level that impacts the way that you feel about yourself, creates this feedback loop that continues on. But then also with strength, there's technique. You know, and so a person that, and I, you know, I do this in all sorts of things. And I see, there's things that I see and probably lots more that I don't see, you know, but strength comes from intelligence. It comes from technique. It comes from alignment. And so just because a person is pushing harder and working and working and working, for that blowout CrossFit workout or whatever it may be, your soul cycle, we're just blasting themselves. That does create more resilience, at least like an aerobic cardiovascular level. But strength comes from being able to orient yourself like that baby. You know, so that baby's got that big head and it's wobbling around. So it has to find this perfect alignment with gravity. You don't see it developing all these weird compensatory muscles and, you know, huge delts or biceps or abs or any of that stuff. It's kind of this soft, supple, kind of floating in alignment within that field of gravity. So gravity isn't this thing that's bashing down on the child. It's actually a thing that's lifting the child up. Because if there wasn't gravity, it's kind of like, think of like a flower. Like a flower goes up towards the sunlight, also goes up, you know, against in line with that gravity. So it's almost, you could almost say that the gravity lifts the child, because if that gravity was coming from another direction, then the child would grow into that direction. So as much as, unless the child or the adult, or, you know, we're all just children, we're all, you know, what is the thing, adults are children wearing adult costumes, you know, we're all just running our own old trying child to be. Stuff. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right, exactly. You know, but gravity, if the organism, the being, is in structural alignment, then gravity ends up being literally a lifting force, which is a very interesting thing. But if you're just a person that just is hammering out more squat thrust, whatever things, and just work harder, 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 then that gravity can become very tiring. And you're eventually asking for some form of burnout, whether it's adrenal fatigue or whether it's some form of itis in one of your joints or, you know, any of that.
Yeah, I guess so, I think of it as the gravity, like if you have the body in space and you have like these three planes and you have gravity and you have to produce force from your body. Like you have to produce energy in the form of force through the ground to, I guess, align yourself against gravity. And when the posture is not optimal, you have those compensatory strategies that you speak of. You have fatigue and you have an inability to function and perform. Whereas the more aligned your posture is, like that production and transfer of force through the body becomes kind of effortless, and you have this like sweet spot where you're not working so hard.
Yeah. So if you see a sprinter, you know, that's really fast, most of that contractile force that they're putting into running, it's being saved. You know, so you get the machine going, off the bat, it's a lot of energy. But once you get moving, a lot of that speed is just coming from that person accessing their own elastic capacity through their hips and, you know, these anatomy trains, which is Tom Myers reference. But you're connecting all of those different chains and those bands throughout your whole body because that sprinter has connected those dots. But if you're a person that's more like, you know, like a bodybuilding background, which is kind of more what I was really obsessed with at a younger age, you're almost breaking those trains up. You're creating separation in between each of those parts. It looks super impressive. You know, it's like really cool to look at. You think that person's going to be super athletic, but in fact, they're super broken. You know, not broken in the sense of, you know, it just literally like the connection point between those trains, use that same metaphor, is disconnected. You know, so that's one of the reasons. I know we're kind of, we'll get back to the senses stuff, but something as simple as like play is a really valuable thing because, you know, if you can go out and just play tag with some friends or play basketball or play frisbee or ultimate frisbee or anything like that, you're natural, or wrestle. Like wrestling is such an important thing for humans, you know, roughhousing.
I don't think we're allowed to do that now.
It's crazy, man. You're asking for problems if you take that away from children. You know, they're learning, how do I push boundaries appropriately? They're learning, oh, okay, too much. That person, they slapped me. You're like, whoa, that was, what happened there? That was a learning experience. You know, they're crying now. Holy crap. Versus like, I've never cried and I've never made anybody cry in my whole life. During that developmental time, I've just never, I don't even know. And now I'm this 30-year-old man with money, and I've got a gun, and I've got this whole world. I've got this business. I have power over the world, and I don't have any emotional intelligence because I was never actually allowed to cultivate that during those developmental years. And it's so flipping invaluable, you know? And so during those times, you're not only learning greater emotional intelligence, you know, but you're learning physical intelligence through that time that you rode your bike through a pile of leaves, and then you hit a rock and you spilled and you tumbled out of it. No, we need our kids to be doing that stuff. And we need ourselves to be doing that stuff. Be willing to get lost in the experience of, you know, dancing to some weird music or,
you mentioned like it's not just like play, like go play basketball or play with the ball. It's more of like an approach to a lifestyle and like, kind of like be more playful, regardless of what you're doing.
Being more playful in this conversation, not needing to be like, okay, you need to be this brilliant interviewer, you know, and I need to be this amazing author, whatever. It's like, let's just play.
Oh man, thanks for taking the pressure off. I appreciate that.
Seriously, you know, and then at the end, the conversation or whatever the thing is starts to roll, and you get into more of a flow state because you've removed that superficial crust layer of, you know, who I think I'm supposed to be and who you think you're supposed to be. And we go back and forth in this ping pong thing until eventually, that's like with relationships, you know, when in relationship, you meet the representative, yeah. You know, and then I'll have my rep. Your people will talk to my people and we'll have this thing. And then in 3 months, you're like, okay, this is who I am. You know, and you're like, oh, I don't like this at all. You know, it's like, well, what if we're just more honest, you know, from the get-go?
Every relationship probably has to go through that. Even a successful one, like that eventually becomes very healthy without the toxic patterns. And they do like or love each other. Like at some point you have to go through that and then like grow in tandem somehow, where you're growing individually, but you're both growing.
Yeah.
In generally the same direction.
Yeah. The question is just how thick is each person's crust layer? Mm. You know, so you can have a crust layer that's your whole ball, you know, it's just this big, thick crust. And then there's a little itty bitty core in there that like, I don't want to show that part, because then if you don't like the core part, then you like really don't like me. It's a very vulnerable place to be at.
Well, vulnerability is a practice thing. I mean, and that's one thing that I kind of like listening for, man. I mean, it's nice to just hear grown men very comfortable practicing vulnerability and putting in the way they speak. And I find it really refreshing. And I don't think there's like a lot of it out there. At least I'm not exposed to that a lot outside of podcasts, like listening to podcasts. I don't get it on, I don't watch a lot of TV, but I don't see it in like the local community level very much. And I think that's one of the things that's drawn me to listening to podcasts, to hear grown men be vulnerable and have like legitimate real conversations. And to me, it's inspiring.
Well, podcasts, like anything, is a relationship. So you could listen, not that I recommend anyone does, but you know, I've done not a ton of episodes, but I've done like, I think I'm at almost 300, it's like 280 something. You know, and so the first, I would say at least 100, 150, you know, I think I was shit, you know, like I was just learning, you know, but it was a lot of like, you get to see this Aaron character's superficial layer trying to project that he's really smart, you know, and trying, it's like, it wasn't really about the guest. It was more about me impressing the guest with how smart I was, you know, and it's like, that's just all nonsense. It's all garbage.
I'm sure I still have a little bit of that going on right now, being right.
No, you seem great. Well, you're like a wiser person. Like you're like,
oh, inside I'm terrified, man.
You have more years behind your belt. Like I started the podcast when I was, which I mean, more years could just be more deeply ingrained patterns. But you know, it doesn't seem like that's been your thing. They seem like you've been like watching what the hell's going on. I started it when I was 27. you know, and 27 is a fine age, you know, whatever. But I was, there's just a lot of like, God, I'm talking to these people that are like, you know, you're like multiple time New York Times bestselling author, and you're like a Nobel Prize winning whatever, like all these things. And I'm just this asshole in my office that teaches people how to squat better, you know, and I'm recording to my, you know, my blue Yeti microphone, just kind of talking shit like, okay, I read your book, so I'm going to try to really show you this. Right. And then it just, it makes it be kind of like two monologues as opposed to actually any form of dialogue and connection. And so that's a relationship though. So you see the first beginning portion of the relationship called the Align Podcast, which is the name of my thing, you know, and it's the first few while for me, it was like a year into the relationship, I would say at least before I started having some semblance of, I'm just going to show up and, you know, be as honest as I know how to be and see what comes of that. And it's not always going to be perfect. It's not always going to be, you know, some, I think they end up being perhaps more helpful than others, you know, but I think that's a cool place to come from, because then as soon as you disarm yourself, then that, which I noticed in the conversation when you were, when, you know, I mentioned like, let's just, you know, be ourselves and kind of, you know, whatever. I noticed there was almost like this sense of like, you were kind of jokingly saying, wow, that takes the pressure off, but it felt like it actually did.
Oh, I think it was, I was being serious. Like,
yeah, no. And so that's an interesting thing. So we're joking about that, but it's like, oh, I actually felt, which, I mean, we're all just creating our own stories, our minds, but I actually felt this level of like, oh, for myself as well, when you just come out and say it, yeah. You know, and then from there, it's like, okay, now we can start, you know, well, so thanks. We laid the foundation and it's like, okay, now we can begin.
Thanks. Having the insight there to soften my nerves a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in it together.
That's funny. That being said, I still do want to dive into the book a little bit.
Yeah, we can dive. Sorry.
I would like to talk a little bit about the senses and posture. I mean, I like, you talk about like the kind of the far reaching aspects of our life of that our posture has, that we don't think of. And when you hear you say it, you're like, oh yeah, of course I've recognized that. And, but it's not something we like learn through regular schooling. I mean, you might have a mother or father that said, stand up straight. But like the way our posture might feed off others, or like when you walk into a room, how you're holding yourself in space, like what that does, like the link to your mental and emotional state, and like how that could even affect the other people in the room or their posture affect you.
Yeah.
Are you open to touching on some of those ideas?
It's my favorite conversation ever. I think like any, like that's like what the book is predominantly about, in my opinion. The other thing, everything else is kind of just details of how to get deeper into that relationship.
Oh, okay.
You know, so like that stand up straight, that can be just a band-aid, like a form of like, you know, another analogy would be like spiritual bypassing. You know, so instead of addressing the thing, I just layer on some Eckhart Tolle quotes or something like that. Like, okay, cool. He's like totally good. You know, it's like, so that idea of stand up straight, that's like the Eckhart Tolle quote when you actually just want to have a cry, you know, and with that stand up straight, what can be happening in a person from a young age, they could be ingraining that it's not okay to feel. It's not okay to be natural, you know, it's more stand up natural, you know, that's, and if erectness manifests from your natural state, perfect, stand up straight, you know, but if you start with that compensation of, okay, it's not okay to feel into this different postural pattern, because you can think of your body, it's almost like a tuning fork. You know, when you hunch yourself over into a certain position, which I've experienced this in like plant medicine ceremonies, for example, slash just general daily life, you know, slash there's an immense amount of research that correlates our postural patterns to the way that we think and the way that we feel and the way that we, even the way that we access memories. So there's research that I put into the book, I think in the Posture Personality chapter, which is the first chapter. From San Francisco State University. And it was, they had two groups of students. And the one group was in this kind of hunched over, collapsed, I call it the mopey archetype in the book. and they're in that Mopi archetype for a little while. And during that time, they're asked to access different memories. Like, think back to some different memories. And what they found is people would more easily be able to access more like depressive memories in the times that I felt down, you know, because that postural patterning is anchored, which is a neurolinguistic programming term, NLP term. Mm-hmm. You've anchored that every time that I go, oh, I drop my shoulders down and I kind of, my head collapses down forward and maybe I scrunch my eyes up a little bit. You've anchored that position to be, okay, my body does this, I feel this way. You know, then you take a person winning a race, whether they're blind or have some type of mental disabilities of sorts, or they're deaf, whatever it may be, they win a race. Everybody wins a race the same way. You know, you cut through the ribbon and boom, your shoulders come up and you smile and your eyes open up and your shoulders come back and you expose your vital organs because you feel safe. You know, and so now you've anchored that position. Okay, cool. Now students from San Francisco State University / anybody at home go into this more upright, we call it the aligned archetype in the book, go into that position. Now think back, like what can you ponder on inside your mind? And it's like, oh, wow, yeah, I remember that time that I got that trophy. I remember that time the girl said yes to going to the dance with me.
That's, you know, fascinating, man.
You've anchored that. So, okay, cool. Now we have two poles. So I do five postural archetypes in the book, right. You know, but there's much more than that. You know, you can look into Paul Ekman, who I've had him on the podcast as well. He's like one of the most cited psychologists ever. And his study was all facial expressions. So he pointed out specifically 10,000 different facial expressions that human beings make, and they all have different specific meanings. You know, so two ends of the poles, feeling really good, access this type of sensation. Feeling really depressed in the literal sense of the word, access this type of sensation. Now, what's every meaning in between? Now you can just, you know, you can start kind of feeling into that, and you'll start to feel different postural patterns have different meanings.
That's interesting. The fact that it affects what you choose to remember, that's kind of crazy. Like, I know that I've experienced the ability to like change a mood from changing posture, or even like smiling. I think you might have even mentioned this book. I think, Sarah, we've put out at least one meditation that is basically just a smile meditation. It's like you're spending some time smiling. And I know, like, I have trouble with this. I definitely have a history, a good amount of like suffering. And so for various reasons, I mean, we all have our own sufferings, but yeah. I know that some people definitely have it easier to like smile. Like, it's not work. And I find I have a tendency where it's real easy for me to forget how to smile. And there's a, like a physical and emotional correlate to that. And I mean, it could be a chicken and the egg thing, but it seems like if you just force yourself to smile, like intentionally, with no like expectation of like, I'm going to make myself happy or whatever, but just like the practice of changing that facial posture within, I'd say, a relatively short period of time, you know, half minute, 2 minutes, like your mood changes, like the chemistry in your body and or the neurotransmitter relationships in your brain change for the better.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's like, man, we have a lot of say in how we kind of navigate through life and how we experience it. And we could like flip on switches pretty easily. And, you know, the posture thing is obviously one that we have a lot of control of. Now, some people, you know, might have some kind of restrictions where they're maybe in this moment aren't able to structurally have like what somebody would consider like ideal or optimal posture, but it could always be like some movement in there in that direction. Like, do you have a cue that you give people? Like, if our listeners wanted, well, where do I begin with that? Like, is there some little cue that I could think about?
Yeah.
When I'm going through life to like, what's my cue, whether I'm sitting or standing, to address it? I know there's a lot more work to be done underneath and groundwork and environmental changes to allow that to be more authentic, I guess, that your posture just naturally is in more alignment. But is there like a cue that we could kind of walk around with to be mindful of? Or
yeah, there's lots, but the one thing I would just back up, because it can be kind of like dangerous territory to define. You have to define better, you know? And so if we say like, okay, if I've got, you know, in relation to like neurochemistry, if I have this cocktail of serotonin versus dopamine versus norepinephrine, whatever, because that's good, that's better, you know? And if this stuff starts coming in and I start to feel kind of down and I start to feel a bit depressed, that's worse. You know, and it's like, well, now you get yourself in the same trap, you know, being like, okay, I want this and I want to push away that, you know? And so then as long as you're in that place, then you're just in this up down roller coaster thing, you know? And then the stock market crashes and you jump off of a building, the stock market comes back up. You're like, oh shit, I shouldn't have jumped. You know, you're happy and you buy champagne and then it goes down again. You're like, oh my God, what am I going to, and it's like, that's your life. You know? So I think a really important place to be at is a place of not having a better or worse, just having, you know, acceptance. And when you come into that place of like, okay, I feel kind of down and I know that I have these tricks in my bag, you know, I know that I can go and, you know, take a walk and I can look up at some trees, you know, or maybe I can look up at some clouds, you know, and I can take my sunglasses off so I can allow that sunlight to actually penetrate my eyes, you know. And
don't you know that the sun is bad for you, Aaron?
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, and so the sun is a very valuable tool, slash relationship for us to be able to produce the neurochemistry for us to feel well. You know, and it's like you're charging your battery at a cellular level. You know, so when you go out and expose yourself to that sun, we all know how much sun is too much. You know, it's like we trust ourselves to drink water. You know, it's not like it's not like you're like, well, you can't trust people because if they drink too much water, like a hypernatremia,
right.
You need to go talk to the government and get the FDA and then they'll pour you exact amount of water each day. It's like, are you kidding me? You're like, yeah, I know I drank too much water. I'm not thirsty anymore. You know, like I feel kind of uncomfortable. I feel like my belly is like full.
I can hear it swishing around.
Yeah, I'm like, that's too much water. You're like, oh, sun. You know what I mean? That thing that we've evolved with since the beginning of forever. Like, you are the sun.
You're it like, gives you the have, same signal when you've had too much.
You have a pretty good sense when you've had too much sun. You're like, wow, this sun feels pretty hot on my face. You know, I feel like I'm getting kind of red. You know, it's like, okay, cool. Maybe, you know, put a shirt on.
Yeah.
You know, or put a hat on or something like that. It's fine. You know, and so, but before that, you need to get enough water. You need to get enough sun. You need to get enough food. You know, and so that's a separate conversation. But in relation to, where was I at? Getting out, talking. Oh, yeah. Allowing yourself. So we have all these tools. That feels really good to have tools. It's good, it feels good to have resources. That makes a person feel safe. And if you feel resourced enough, because you do understand the mechanics of, you know, what it means to move optimally, effectively, to be able to get the most mechanical leverage, you could say, if that's like our goal is like, okay, I'm getting the most leverage out of my hips here. I'm creating the most spaciousness in my spine and my lungs and my organs and, you know, my brain and the, you know, the relationship of my skull to my neck and my sacrum and my pelvic. It's like there's this balancey, buoyant type sensation. I know how to move in such a way that creates spaciousness. That's like a really powerful tool to understand. You know, and then I also know how to go out and start to naturally stimulate all of these internal neurotransmitters and such. I can go out and get some sun. I can, you know, pay attention to my diet. I have maybe strong relationships that I can reach out to and kind of talk things out. You know, maybe we go take a walk together instead of just, you know, sitting in a couch kind of talking on the phone with my phone pressed up against my face, because I understand the effects of that. You know, so have those resources and then also be accepting of the time where it's like, you know what, I just feel like shit. And like, okay, cool, like, great.
That's okay too.
Yeah, let's do that. Like, we could feel like shit together, maybe, even if you want, or maybe, or whatever you want. Just know that that's okay. So now you're not in this double bind situation where you're like, I feel like shit, and I feel like shit because I feel like shit. And now I feel like shit because I feel like shit because I feel like shit. And you're like, oh my God, I'm like so wrapped up in this thing because I have this story of what's good and what's bad. You know, so all of that links back posturally as well. There's good posture, bad posture. You know, I would say there's natural posture. And if you continue chipping away, you know, I heard Sadhguru, I think it was the guy, he said, meditation is a thing that just naturally happens. You know, so you don't need to meditate. You know, like you, by doing all the crap that I just described, go take walks out in the sun, like pay attention to the type of, are you eating meditative food? You know, are you eating like Coca-Cola and Red Bull? You know, are you eating like, you know, whatever, something that's healthy for you, steamed vegetables and some salmon or something, whatever your diet, I don't care. You know, I think it's the history behind where the food came from is more important than the actual title of the food itself. You know, so it's looking at like, if I do these subtle little things throughout the day, they begin to aggregate and I become meditation. You know, if I do these subtle things throughout the day, they aggregate and I become movement. You know, I become like my highest expression if I do the subtle little things that no one's paying attention to. You know, and so that'd be something I think would be very valuable, is don't create a story of what's good and bad, because that's dangerous territory. And also acknowledge that your natural highest expression will just manifest itself by bringing just a little bit more attention into your daily life.
Well said. Yeah, which does, but I mean, you know, to create change and move that in some direction, I mean, you don't want to be like attached to like, it should be this. But it's nice to have some kind of direction. Like you're climbing a mountain that's got no summit, but you still want to be walking.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not always going to take steps up, like in that direction. Like you want to be able to observe like this, I'm going this way now. This is the way I'm going and it feels like this. And to be able to recognize like when you're off course, like if you were to, I don't know, drink that Coca-Cola or eat McDonald's and you're like, oh, this is what it feels like to consume these things. It feels like crap. I'm not on the same track. I'm here right now.
I'm climbing the chaussy, tumultuous version of the mountain.
Yeah. It's helpful to at least have a general direction that you want your like decisions to be pointed in, so that so you know which step to take now. And to be able to recognize when you're kind of out of step and not be upset of it, because like the attachment to that top will create a conflict when you're outside of that line. But if you're just like, this is what it's like to be outside of the line, this moment's like this over here, that could be helpful. That being said, like there's still something it's still important. Like we're still like going to be the sum of all these practices to do. And we want to, you know, ideally facilitate some growth for ourselves where like there's a step that we're working on now. They're like, there's some practice that we're doing, like, because we're always going to be the cumulative sum of all the practices we've done so far and all the other things that have, you know, interacted with those practices, whether, you know, going back to our childhood, like you mentioned, or even what sounds like maybe even before childhood, as you referenced earlier. But, let's get into maybe some of the practices that somebody might be able to, you know, use as some type of intervention to their life now, like just a little tidbit of, and maybe you could touch on some of the things that are like your anchors that you rely on as like your daily medicine.
Yeah, for sure. So the pattern in this conversation is you come back to actionable tools and then I spin out talking about like metaphysical nothingness. I have just a little bit of that and then I'll give actionable tools. So I think it is very valuable to, again, Buddha nature, social security code, like come be able to oscillate the lens in and out. And this is a metaphor for your visual muscles. And it also affects the way that you perceive the world and the way that you feel. You know, so can you use those visual muscles, the literal and the metaphorical ones, to be able to look out into the distance and see what's coming, analyze the terrain? And now can you go more into those myopic muscles and, you know, focus in on what's the step in front of me? You know, and so literally with our visual system, when we are looking up close at things, it's putting our nervous system into more of like an executive function, kind of sympathetic, like get stuff done type place. When you open up and you go into that panoramic view, think of like a person that you might meet that, you know, you want them to get a bunch of work done and they're just kind of, you know, they're always thinking about surfing or whatever, and they're hanging out in the classroom and, you know, you want them to focus in on the book and kind of be stressed out about the test, but they're always just kind of like spacing out, you know, they're just like, this guy is this fucking Jimmy, man. He comes in, his pants are sagging. He's just not focused. You know, he's always just sitting there in the back, just spacing out. You know, I want him to focus in on the teacher. It's like, well, his nervous system is in a place where he's more in that just like taking it all in. Like, I don't really, you know, care about this book or this teacher. I'm just going to kind of go back and kind of go into more of like a resting type place. You know, it's like, but it's time to focus. You know, and so then there's the other person, you know, Lisa, that she's hyper vigilantly focused. She's an A+ student. You know, and she's always locked in on the teacher, and she's locked in on the book, and then locked in on her phone and the computer, you know, and she doesn't know how to relax. You know, she's just, she never spaces out. You know, she never just sits back and takes it all in, you know, and her nervous system responds to that. You know, it's again, it's another tuning fork, you know, and so we can start to play with the way that we feel based off of the way that we use our visual muscles. So if you're a person that maybe you had too much coffee today, or you're stressed out about, you know, the global pandemic, or, you know, whatever it may be is happening in your world, and you really feel like, God, I feel stressed, I feel like tension in my belly. Something that you can do, an actionable technique that you can do, is you could literally just go take a walk outside. You know, you could put your computer screen near a window, for example, so that you can regularly look up away from the computer screen and look out the window. You know, and as you look out the window, you can start to maybe even take in that whole scene. You know, so you're literally taking in that panoramic view. You're opening up your eyes to be able to take it all in. That will trickle back in to your autonomic nervous system and make you start to literally feel in real time more calm. You can stack on top of that, oh, maybe I'm gonna do the panoramic vision thing. I'm gonna look out. Maybe I'm gonna take a walk, you know, as well, which is helpful for all sorts of other things. You know, and then as I do that, maybe I'm gonna emphasize my exhalation so that when we exhale, you know, into that, that if you're a sensitive person, which everybody is, that would make you feel a certain way. Even hearing somebody go, your nervous system goes, oh.
Sympathetic, you know? Resonance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're always attuning to each other, including ourselves. You know, so you're attuning to the way that you conduct yourself. And the way that I conduct myself and the way that I am attunes to you and vice versa. We're always stirring around. We're like different ingredients in a pot. You know, we're like alchemizing to each other. We're affecting each other's flavors.
So just like where we're looking with our eyes, or like where the focus, or I guess the lack of focus is, ties into like our current nervous state. So like if we're looking at something very close and kind of fixated on it, it's going to encourage, like, I don't want to say like a stress, or maybe like a more of a sympathetic side, like an intensity to it. And if we're just kind of not so focused, or and just like taking it all in, it's just that in itself could facilitate like more relaxation and a calmness of our nervous system.
And also something that facilitates relaxation is focus. So if you're a person, if you're spaced out Jimmy in the back that just doesn't give a shit about anything, that might start to create some stressors in his life. So every time you breathe in, that activates more, that spins up more, that sympathetic fight, flight, get stuff done side of the nervous system. When you breathe out, that activates more of that, okay, calm. But you do that all day. Right. Like that's your life, yin yang, black, white, you know, moon, sun. It's like, that's like, it's that's been innate in like every spiritual text / like movie, anything throughout history. You know, it's like that's the way that you operate effectively. And then you have to define effectively, you know, because again, it's all just words, you know, but for the most part, for most people's definition of effectively, that would be the way that you would do that is you're able to seamlessly oscillate between fight, flight, get shit done, grit your teeth, rah, to complete just like relaxation, supple muscles, calm, deep sleep, and then get up and boost this cortisol and slam some coffee and like go for a run or whatever. Like that's fine. But if you're stuck in either one where you're always spacing out, that will create stress because you don't get shit done. If you're stuck in a place where you're always getting shit done, that will create stress because you don't know how to rest.
Right. Hmm. There was something, there was an exercise. Maybe you could like even coach the listeners on this because I thought it was, I don't know, it was really subtle and surprising to me. There was an exercise where you stick, I don't know if I'm saying it right, so you correct me if I'm wrong, but you stick your thumbs out at like arm's reach and you found a point in the distance. So, I mean, ideally this is done outside, I guess. And if the listeners actually want to try this, that'd be cool. If you're driving, maybe don't do it. Or if you're operating some, you know, big machinery or something, but, or if you're like a doctor performing surgery now, or the patient for that matter, maybe pause this and do this another time, but like you had your arm extended with like your thumb out and you find something in the distance to fix your focus on. And then you went back and forth from the thumb to that other thing. And I was playing around with this with like both eyes, with one eye, the other eye. And it was cool. It felt like, man, I'm going to the gym for my eyeballs. And, and I always like to like look for ways I could stack modalities and multitask because there's just not enough time in the day. And I'll be doing something. I'll like do this at the same time. And I was surprised because I do it for, I don't know, a minute maybe. And it felt like there was a neurological change. Like it felt like there was a reset of some sort, like a calming effect just by playing around. And I wasn't looking for that. It just kind of hit me like, what did I just do? I just spent a minute like playing around what I was looking at. Is that kind of what you're talking about? Just like the zooming out of your vision, is some kind of signal to relax neurologically? Is there a mechanism of action there? Or?
Yeah. And so like I mentioned, like each way is great. If you need to focus in, you've got something that it's important that you got to land an airplane or something like that, you know, and you're spacing out. You probably naturally, you're going to just focus in inevitably. But if you're a person that does kind of, you're not a fan of always being so dang spacey, you know, and maybe you're like really artistic and you just want to throw color at the wall and whatever, but like you could use a little bit more linearity in your life, then you can practice that focusing part. So focusing in on the thumb in this case.
All right, talk us through it. So for the listeners, if there's a window, if you're outside, great. If there's a window nearby, are you okay with that, Aaron?
Tell us how it sure.
is. Yeah. I'm going to follow along too. I got a window next to me. Go ahead, tell us what to do.
Yeah, well, so in the book, we break down various different versions of this, you know, and so there's a great resource, my buddy called Ryan Glatt, who he helped me through some of this, like the eye exercise chapter, and he works for a place out here that's all about how our visual system affects our neurology. But the specific exercise that you're referring to is essentially you're playing with putting your thumb out in front of you. And so you can alternate in, focus all of your visual acuity into focusing in on that thumb, and then playing with ease going out into the distance. And so going into, maybe you could look out at like a tree branch or look out at a bird or whatever it may be, and then experience how that feels looking out into the distance, and then come back into your thumb and see how that feels looking into the thumb. You could also play with moving the thumb back and forth. So you could keep your head in place and alternate going side to side with that thumb. You could alternate, same thing, looking out into the distance and kind of looking, something, a nice thing that I would recommend is emphasizing looking up and to the left, because our visual muscles so often are looking down and to the right towards our cell phones. And so little things like that, your eyes, you can think of your eye muscles almost like reins of a horse. You know, so you're pulling those reins, it pulls the horse's bit over to the right, so the horse turns to the right. You know, so as we are using our visual muscles, all those muscles are kind of like reins that pull our neck into a certain position. You know, so you can feel this now. If you look up and put your head in the back, your hands in the back of your head, it's called the suboccipital ridge. There's these little muscles back here that they will start to, if you just look up with your eyes, you'll literally feel those muscles, erectus capitis, and right, there's all the sorts of different names, but there's a bunch of really small little muscles. And you'll feel those muscles contract slightly because they are neuromuscularly wired, you know, so, yeah, you know, and so something that you can play with and realizing like, okay, when I change my eye muscles, that changes my neck muscles. When I change my neck muscles, that changes my, you know, the way that I ambulate, changes the way that I move through the world. I'm literally pulling those reins in a certain direction. So if I'm always looking down and to the right, that will literally start to, from the get-go, from our visual system, start to create an imbalance in around our head and our neck. Our head and our neck, that's your senses. You know, that's like you, where you drive your vehicle from that place. You know, so imagine if you like, if you had your car, you know, and the steering column was messed up, you know, and so it's like, it feels straight, but the wheels are off to the left. Hmm. You're like, your ride is kind of funny. And then you'd figure out how to compensate for that. You're like, okay, when I drive, you know, I just turn my hands to the right and that's actually straight. And you figure it out. But the time that you finally got it back to like, okay, you know, what do they say? 10 and 10 and 2 or whatever. Like I'm back in the middle, like, wow, this feels great. I don't have that torsion of my shoulder. My hips aren't conked out of whack because I'm kind of reaching over to the right to keep the car straight. You know, so acknowledging that your visual muscles, one, just from like a purely mechanical, physical level, they're tied into your musculoskeletal system. And then two, more from like a neurological and, you know, more of a, like a nervous system level, they're tied into the way that you think and the way that you feel. You know, and then that spills back into the way that we posturally move through the world. You know, that affects our posture, you know, and then that affects the way that we conduct ourselves in relationship. It affects the way that we, the way we perceive ourselves when we look in the mirror. You know, this is like your perception of who you are is in part dictated or at least associated by the way that you move through the world. You know, and the way that you move through the world is deeply associated to who the heck you think you are. You know, so you can change one and it will inevitably trickle into the next. You know, it's like the butterfly effect. You know, you walk down the street and you sneeze and all of a sudden there's like a storm on Saturn, you know, in 10 years or something.
So even something as little as moving your eye one way as opposed to another way can affect
a storm on Saturn.
Yeah, your environment around you. Yeah. Far-reaching effects of posture. That's cool.
Yeah, that's right. I like that. I should have labeled a chapter that.
So you also mentioned an idea that I wanted to touch on. This is something that I think I've kind of dwelled in a different use of different words, but there's no pause in self-development. Like you're like whatever you're doing is I guess like what you are training. Like you are practicing whatever you're doing. And it's not like, and you mentioned earlier, like, it's not so much the hour you spend in the gym, it's the other 23 hours. Like, you can't flip on an adaptation switch. Like, all right, I'm going to go to the gym at 1:30. So let me flip this adaptation switch on because I want to adapt to these gym environments from 1:30 to 2:30 and then turn it off and then let everything, like my system, ignore all the time on the couch or at the dinner table or in the car. Like how do you account for that? Like, how do you account for that? We're almost like fighting back from like the cultural norm where we're always put in these well, many of us are, you know, defaulted into these environments that don't really serve our body well and then affect how we navigate, you know, through our life and how we feel about ourselves. Like, how do you work that into your routine where you account for that concept?
Well, it starts to get more interesting. You know, the more that you can start to pay attention in daily life, the idea of being bored, which I'm bored a lot, you know, that happens where I'm just like, God damn it, I'm bored. Like, this is annoying. Okay. Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, and so, but one of the things that a person can do, like there was some other research that we included in the book of washing dishes, you know, and just simply paying attention to the act of washing dishes, you know, noticing maybe the light bouncing off the bubbles, or noticing the temperature of the water, noticing the weight of your feet on the ground, any of that stuff, noticing your breath while you're washing dishes, is actually been shown for people to score higher on creativity tests afterwards, and also reducing stress levels. You know, so it's like you only have so much bandwidth. And for the most part, our bandwidth is kind of pulled into this like chronesthesia thing where we're looking out into the future or stuck in the past, and we're kind of like whirling our wheels in these other places other than like right here, right now. And so if you just intentionally bring your awareness into, for example, from a movement perspective, you know, what is it, the contact of my feet on the ground while I walk? Like, when was the last time you paid attention to that? Maybe be barefoot, so you add a little bit more information into your feet so you can have a more in-depth conversation with yourself. You know, notice as I'm taking a walk, does my hip extend back? Does my left hip extend back more than my right, or vice versa? You know, can I feel my arms swinging? Are my hands kind of contracted while I'm walking? You know, what's the position of my head and my neck? You know, what's my breath like? You know, am I breathing through my nose in the first place? Hopefully I am, because you'd write a whole book about why that's valuable. Patrick McEwen did. He reviewed the nose breathing chapter in my book, thankfully, which was really helpful.
That's awesome.
You know, and so just by bringing yourself into this like kind of magical experience of just beginning to pay some semblance of attention of what the hell is going on, it's actually, one, shown to calm you the freak down, also shown to make you become more creative, which, you know, that's just great. And two, it's beginning to set the stage of you becoming like a more conscious person, not conscious in like a snowflake, new agey kind of spirulina type way, but like you literally are becoming more present in conversation. You're becoming more present with your relationships, with your business, with your own physiology. You know, it's like you are no matter who you are, no matter how derelict you think you are, or how, you know, disconnected or whatever, like, you run an invaluable business. You know, you run this factory that is yourself. And so your liver function, your heart, your lungs, and the thoughts streaming through your mind, like, you are the CEO of this thing. You know, and so if you just let your shit kind of spin out, you don't pay attention to the employees, you don't pay attention to the mechanics of the machines, you know, like, you're going to have a shitty ass company. You know, it's going to be a rough ride in that company.
I guess just the act of like observing, it's like practicing observing the self. And in turn, I guess in time, like, the observation will change behavior in itself. Like, just the act of paying attention to what you do, you're going to wind up changing behavior.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And so shitty ass companies, I'm just kind of being like silly. It's just going to be an uncomfortable company to exist in, you know, would be like a more intelligent way of saying it. You know, and that's like, I would rather live in a community that feels at ease. You know, you can walk outside and you don't feel like you're under threat. You know, you your neighbors like you. You know, it's like, that's like, yeah, you're in a place where it's like, oh, like, why do I have good relationships with my neighbors? Why do I have good relationships with people on, you know, whoever, you know, why do I have a good relationship with myself? It's like, well, I've been paying attention, you know, and I acknowledge like, oh, it's like something's off here. You know, the way that I'm using my ankle or my knee or my hip, or the way that I'm conducting myself in these conversations, like, I'm kind of like an arrogant jerk. You know, and it's like, well, if I started to perhaps begin that process of just paying attention from a non-biased place, like really like observing this human experience, I think that opens up the potential to start to see some of those little, you know, foibles that we might.
I almost wonder. I mean, I haven't really talked about this stuff in any of the content yet, but with like the whole pandemic thing and the disease itself, and like seeing the populations where it's affected, and like you see the areas of these density, like think of like New York City. That's a, like, I get stressed when I'm in New York City. Like I don't, have you been in New York City?
Yep.
Like I find it like chaotic and stressful, just like trying to see which direction I'm pointed and where to go. Like I know a lot of people love it and there's an energy to it that I could definitely understand why people would dig, but there's gotta be like that is, there's like an underlying stress because of the speed. And like, I wonder, like with, when, I think there's even a study, I think they said, where you could tell how large of a city or town someone lives from like how fast they walk. Like in New York, people
how fast they talk.
Well, how fast they talk. Okay.
Yeah. Like probably walk too, but talk sure. The pace.
Like everything's moving really fast. And I wonder like how much self-observation can you have or is there in an environment like that when everything is so packed in and kind of like an unnatural setting? Like that's not natural that, well, I mean, it's there.
Maybe there is no natural, you know, yeah. so you could say like, I spent a couple weeks living in a hammock in the Amazon at one point. I'm not saying that to be like hashtag world traveler, look at me or whatever, but that was just like being there. It's fucking noisy and mosquitoes. Like I would so much rather be in New York than always. Like you could literally hear, like once the sun goes down, you're like, I need to be in a net, you know? And we'd be like hanging out, talking to these people that I was staying with. And you know, it's like, I was staying at this like little, not little, I mean, they're literally like much smaller than I was, like this big bearded giant. But this family out there on the river, and we're like talking, and, you know, and it's just like the whole time you're just slapping yourself. Like literally, like that's what you're doing the whole entire time. And then there's anacondas and there's like snakes and there's like, you know, there's all this stuff around, you know? And so that's like, well, that's a lot of kind of stuff going on. It's a lot of noise, like frenetic, yeah. You know? Or then you could go out into the desert, you know, and there's like, wow, it's just like this deep, eerie quietness. There's just nothing there, you know? And it's like, well, those are just different gears, right, you know? Cool. And so you can be in that place and it's all, if you can come into a place of really being attentive to saying, oh, what do all these mosquitoes do to the way that this feels? What do all these, this traffic and, you know, this schedules and all that stuff, like what does it do to the way that this feels? You know, and then the same thing on the other side. But you can always, always, always have that attention. You know, and that's like what Viktor Frankl gets into with Man's Search for Meaning. You know, he's in a place where he's getting passed around, skipped around from concentration camp to concentration camp, you know, and he's like, they're burning his book and they're doing all this terrible stuff to him and his family's dying and all this stuff. And he's like, well, what can't they take away from me? They can't take away my perception of the experience. You know, everything else is, I don't have any control of it. So the second that I start to try to play that game of controlling it, I'm just, you know, I'm asking for trouble. And at the same time, play the game. Just don't be attached to the game. Like play the game well, you know, do everything that you can. I'm not saying just flip the board over and say, fuck it. It's like play the game for sure, but don't like be consumed by it.
Yeah, it's the attachment where the conflict in your mind is born out of.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly.
So when you were there and you're like slapping mosquitoes off you, were you able to practice that question you just posed there? Like, what does this mean? Or what is this like to slap a mosquito? Like, how does that compare to the people you were with, the natives? Like, is that did they even notice?
They're probably much better at all these things than I am. I mean, I'm still, just the fact that I'm talking about all this stuff means that I'm probably pretty shit. You know, you know, like you talk about things and you write book about things of stuff that you're trying to figure out.
Right.
You know, if it's not a thing that you like go really deeply into, it's probably because you're fine with it. You know, so, and then I also, like when I was there, it was like, I don't know how old I was, 23 or something like that. You know, and so... no, I wasn't that thinking about anything. This is just retrospect observing.
Gotcha.
But I'm very keenly, astutely aware that I do not know what I don't know. And I think that well of not knowing is like this vacuous black hole. And the stuff that I know is like, it's very tiny. It's like a little satchel.
Dropped in the bucket, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a good way to look at it. You know, it's, you know, I love this saying. I think I referenced it recently. I mean, knowledge is the biggest obstacle to understanding. Like, you don't want to know things. You just want to stay curious and keep dancing forward. And
eventually you can be practicing. Eventually you can be things, you know. And again, it kind of more to like my own self-deprecation, like that, like those who know don't say, those who say don't know, you know. So for the most part, are like teachers and stuff, i.e. why, you know, there's a lot of issues and with any kind of person that puts themselves into some like pedestalized guru role. Mm-hmm. You're almost asking for some type of like sex scandal, or somebody's gonna poison somebody, or something, like some weird shit's gonna happen, because it's not right. Like, people don't do guru well. It's not a play. It's not human. It's not right, in my opinion. You know, and so if you're a play, if you allow that to happen, then and people say, oh my god, you're the best, you're amazing, and you're like, yes I am, you're like, okay, well, this is the beginning of the end.
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, I find the best teachers are the people that don't know that they're teaching. I mean, my kids are my best teachers.
Yeah, right.
By far. Yeah. They're not out with an intent to teach me.
Right.
I mean, once in a while, they might intentionally be fucking with me. But really, they're just being who they are. And they're teaching me, like, how not to hate myself and learn how to love them more.
Yeah, that's how you teach.
Which I pretty
and
much...
And how you learn.
Yeah.
You know, you think you're learning what is on the syllabus, but you're actually learning what's in the environment.
Yeah. And as a parent, are you a parent?
No.
As a parent, it's easy to feel like you fail miserably at those tasks on a regular basis. And you have these constant reminders because you live with your teachers.
Yeah. We do as a parent, you know, again, me talking out my ass because I'm not a parent, but I think it's kind of more stressful and less stressful at the same time. It's more stressful because they're just always attuning. You're always pouring information into your kids, you know, especially like the younger that they are, but I think all throughout. So that's kind of more stressful in a way. So they're going to learn based off of who you are, not what you say, you know. And, but then at the same time, it's almost less stressful because you're like, oh, I don't need to have all this perfect stuff. And like, man, we're a family that doesn't have any money, you know? And now I lost my job because of this fucking pandemic stuff. And all we have is sticks and leaves and, you know, spam. Like, that's literally all we have. You know, it's like, well, I would take that family who has love, you know, and has connection, and you know, the father's really trying and the mother's really trying, and they really like care, and they have that tight-knit group happening. Like, that's what you're actually teaching, you know. So I'd rather be in that family with no books, no TV, no nothing, because we just can't afford it, than the family that's like, we have everything, but the intrinsic stuff's completely, you know, dissolved.
Yeah, I find myself grateful and lucky for the situation I'm in, and try to remind myself every day. I think I have it good in both of those aspects, and I don't want to lose sight of that.
Yeah,
and stay humble. Man, I want to respect your time. I don't know how long we've been at it here. It's about an hour and a half in. Mm-hmm. I think this has been awesome. I really appreciate you kind of teaching me along the way how to like relax a little bit doing this, because I am like right out of the gate and I still am definitely struggling with like just the general insecurities of like, am I doing this well enough? Am I close enough to the mic? Or like, yeah. I have grown up, I've you know, spent the last decade in the gym environment where I feel very comfortable, and like I really stay as far away from computers and electronics as possible. I watch like an hour a week of TV, and all of a sudden I want to connect with people, and I feel like, oh, I have to learn this technology, and it's like a little overwhelming. So I appreciate you making it easy on me.
Yeah, no worries.
I also appreciate you just the way you spill out your way of your approach and the way you look at things. It's just a very refreshing way to hear it. I hope the listeners have gotten something out of it. I want to let the people know how they could reach you, and you know, what you recommend now, and if things are changing because of the current situation, is there something you would recommend for them to try to take a deeper dive into your work?
Hmm. Yeah. Well, so the book, The Align Method, obviously is a great starting point. And then I host a podcast called The Align Podcast. So if you're like an audio person, obviously, if you're listening to this, you probably are. That's been like my child for the last 5 years. Okay. So we have, you know, all sorts of interesting people on there, Marion Williamson and Wim Hof and I don't know, Chuck Liddell. There's all sorts of really fascinating people that I'm very surprised and humbled that they're willing to talk to me.
That's how I felt when you said yes to me, man.
Oh, good. I appreciate it. That's great. And then we have an online program as well. So there's the Align Method book, and then there's the Align Method online program. And the first week is totally free. So people can go in and just try that. Then you can cancel at the end of the week, or you know, cancel any time really. You'll still have the first week, and you will
have. Is that just an ongoing program, or is it like a 6 week course? Or
so the way it's set up now is a 6 week course. I don't know if you knew that or guessed that, but yeah,
I just guessed that, man.
That's good. Yeah, so it's a 6 week course. I think six is it's a convenient number. It's not too much or too little for people to like digest. And each week we give you a new, pretty simple tasks to follow along with. And so the first week is a lot of breath work stuff and some like basics of, we focus on how to get your head back on top of your shoulders. So if your person has like forward head posture and rolled forward shoulders and all that stuff, essentially people that like are looking at computer screens a lot and holding phones a lot, it's geared really specifically towards that. And so all that stuff is found, you know, alignpodcast.com. Everything's Align Podcast.
Okay. So and we'll link to that here in the show notes for all you listeners out there. It says you're a manual therapist. Do you still practice that, or?
Yeah, sometimes.
Is that shut down with the current situation out there in California? I assume not.
Technically, to do that, or? Probably should be, but no, I still see, like, I have like core clients that I see, but the major part of my business now is more programs and books, and been doing a lot of like corporate teaching stuff over Zoom, which is interesting. Okay. But I'm a fan of audiences. That to me is just very inspiring, to be in a room of, I don't know, more than one person, and get to be able to like ride that wave. I just find that very interesting. So that's what's interesting to me these days.
Awesome. Is there anything else you'd like to share for the audience before we let you go?
I don't think so. I mean, I think we pretty much talked it out here.
Man, I really appreciate it. For listeners out there, I hope you enjoyed it, and let the community know if you can, leaving comments. And if you have anything you want to share, we'd like to hear what you got out of it. Aaron, I'd like to thank you again, man. I really appreciate it. Hopefully we could do this again sometime in the future, and maybe one day even in person.
Yeah, man. Let me know.
All right. For everybody out there, you guys have a great day.
All right, see you, bud.
Well, I hope the listeners got some value out of that conversation. I know myself, I enjoyed it quite a bit and got a lot of value out of it. Aaron is a tremendous personality, and I think he offers a lot to learn from, and he really seems to embody what he talks about and what he preaches. I mean, he walks the walk, and it shows, and I think that's just really nice for us to have out there to learn from. If you enjoyed this conversation, please do me a favor and put a review on the podcast. I really appreciate it. I've been getting some feedback. It's still in the early phase of this journey, and so far the feedback's been really positive. So for those that are listening, if you're one of those that was gracious enough to put that positive feedback out there, I thank you personally for that. And if you haven't yet, I do encourage you to do so. I do appreciate your listening today, and I hope you stay tuned for more episodes. Have a great day.